95% of Americans say they believe in God, and I'm one of them. Faith points to a moral law beyond man's law and calls us to duties higher than material gain.
President Bush speaking in Beijing on Friday. The address was broadcast across China. Daniel Shore is on vacation this week, so joining us to talk about the president's trip to Asia and other news of the week is Andrew Sullivan, senior editor at The New Republic. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
The president was in Japan and South Korea at the beginning of the week and ended his trip with a visit to Beijing, where he gave that speech, which included a discussion of religious freedom. And I'm wondering, given the United States' historically rocky relationship with China, was that kind of speech a good idea, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what we're seeing is that the relationship with China is becoming rather boring and normalized. You don't quite have the euphoria of Bill Clinton's last trip, but nor do you have a terribly depressing vista. It seems as if the relationship is beginning to be one in which the United States can say certain things that the Chinese regime isn't particularly going to like, but that we have a grown-up enough alliance or a grown-up enough relationship in order to have those differences aired and yet not have the entire relationship collapse. And I think the end of the annual decision whether we're going to have normal trade with China or not has also helped diffuse that. So we're getting to a rather more normal relationship with the world's most populous power, which is a good thing.
It's interesting that George Bush wasn't supposed to shine on the international stage, but he seems to be doing quite well.
Well, he does have some really good speechwriters. I mean, those speeches are really very accomplished pieces. He's also, as we saw, remember back in the campaign, he did rather well in that foreign policy debate with Al Gore to surprise everybody. And we now find out that, for example, he was having Robert Kaplan in very early on in his administration to talk about obscure countries. We may have misjudged him on this front the way we've misjudged him on many others.
On another world stage this week, the War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague, Slobodan Milosevic continued to defend himself against genocide charges. This was almost bizarre this week. Here was Milosevic cross-examining witnesses who had lived through the war in Kosovo and who were victims of his regime. He was confronting them in court.
I know. It was so bizarre and so unsettling. I mean, what I found fascinating about it is that, you know, we'd love to think of these characters like Milosevic as crazy, Looney Tunes, bizarre, whacked out individuals. In fact, in their own narrow universe, they're quite rational. Mm-hmm. They believe their own propaganda. He believes that he is the victim. And I think it's useful for us to see that. It reminds me of, you know, the Eichmann trial, which Hannah Arendt coined the phrase banality of evil from. And that's what we have here, a rather banal and vain, but highly rational lunatic, who is also, I think, and I don't think anybody would dispute this, an evil person who did things that all of civilization would find abhorrent.
Do you have this unsettling sense that it might not go the way we expect it to go there, that somehow Milosevic is going to wriggle out of this?
No, because I don't think it's quite Hollywood. Mm-hmm. He won't pull it off in the end. And the evidence is so overwhelming. It's not turning out to be like the Colin Ferguson trial, but it is. It's just providing him a platform to display the full extent of his derangement and weird rationality at the same time.
In an American court this week, ex-priest John Gagin was sentenced. He's been accused of molesting more than 130 children in the Boston area. The Boston Archdiocese has clearly mishandled this case. You write a lot about the Roman Catholic Church, and I wonder how deeply you think this might hurt the church, both in Boston and across the United States.
I think as each day goes by and as ordinary Catholics absorb what our church has done, I think the deeper the crisis is, the crisis of confidence. I mean, here is a church that takes rather specific views about sexual morality between consenting adults and tells all its members and many others what's right and wrong about it. And yet, with its own priests, is tolerating not just any consensual sexual activity, but the abuse of children. I can't think of anything more horrifying than that. And it seems to be growing in the Archdiocese of Boston. Up to 70 priests out of 700. That's 10% of the priesthood. This morning, there's more stories of this coming out in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We already know there are many lawsuits in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. This is an astonishing phenomenon, and more astonishing and horrifying than what's been going on has, of course, been the way in which the leaders of the church have looked, first of all, to their own defense rather than the defense of children over the last several years. And I don't think you can underestimate how appalled and angry many Catholics rightly are at this. And I have a feeling this story is just beginning.
There was also a horrible event in Pakistan this week. Reporter Daniel Pearl's death confirmed on videotape. This is something we've been dreading for the past 4 weeks. And here's the confirmation delivered in this horrific fashion on tape.
I know. And part of one dreads the idea that once a videotape of this kind has been made, someone somewhere will put it on the internet. Someone somewhere will manage to get this hideous spectacle broadcast. And there's not much the rest of us can do to stop it. I think it just, to my mind, shows that, and I don't think this is too harsh a word, the barbarism of some of the people that we are dealing with. And it's clear this morning, too, that this is not some isolated criminal activity. This is a central part of the counterattack. And I'm concerned that this isn't going to be the first one. There are going to be many others. And especially with the media attention given to this particular case, paradoxically, it may encourage further kidnappings and murders, which we can only hope to God won't actually happen.
And there's some talk in the White House about some zero tolerance for these sorts of kidnappings. Good idea or bad idea?
I think a pretty bad idea in the sense that, I mean, this was buried in the Washington Post story a couple of days ago. You don't want to get into a situation, I think, however awful these kidnappings are, in which we are allowing kidnappers or terrorists to be able to yank our chain, as it were, yank the chain of the American government, or indeed yank the chain of the global media. In the broad context of the war, the amazing thing so far is how few American casualties there have been, and we should not, I think, be deterred from the effort by what are appalling but nevertheless probably predictable moments like this.
Rosie O'Donnell is going to come up with a new memoir this week, something a little bit happier. She's supposed to be interviewed on one of the major news magazines. And the big news is that Rosie is coming out. She's gay. I'm wondering, how important is this news?
It's groundbreaking, mind-blowing, all of the above. Well, of course, the weird thing is, I don't think that many people in the country were unaware that she might possibly have been lesbian in the first place. Mm-hmm. And she'd already been playing with this sort of notion for many years. And I, for one, am absolutely delighted that she's back. I mean, this is, you know, I'd like to say welcome, Rosie, to the future in which you don't have to choose between your personal integrity and your profession.
Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. It's great to be here.
Andrew Sullivan is senior editor at The New Republic and writes for his website, andrewsullivan.com.